Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson is a multifaceted guitar shop offering guitar instruction, new and used guitars and amplifiers, and all accessories. We offer guitar repair of the highest quality. Instead of experiencing the total hassle of a big box store, take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson and experience what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We love guitars.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another Sly's Office podcast. Again, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation with us. Brother Nichols, how are you today?
Well, let's see. I would say I am fine in the personal circumstance.
Uh-huh.
A little worried about the Republic.
Really? Is there anything troubling you? What would be of your concern?
Well, I'm always concerned when Mike Pence goes up to Capitol Hill.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, as I've said many times from the start of this thing, the most scary thing about the next 4 years in this country is that Paul Ryan and his cohort have influence on our politics. That they're in the room. Now, Donald Trump may say no to them, right? But to the extent that you get Pence and Ryan starting to shape things,
uh-huh.
starting to have influence, along with Reince Priebus, a few others, that's where you see the absolute deconstruction of the social safety net. Nothing does more harm to people.
Well, you know, so, that's interesting because Paul Ryan said you have to, in order to undo Obamacare, you have to deal and reform Medicare and Medicaid. You have to deal with these things.
Isn't that funny?
And he said, no, we're not talking about ending these programs.
No. Not ending them. Just letting Paul Ryan's buddies on Wall Street make, and in the healthcare industry, make more money off them.
Mm-hmm.
These
essentially would become vouchers, right?
Well, it doesn't matter whether they become vouchers. Precisely. That is what he likes at this point. But you see, Sly, it's not about a specific plan. It's just about restructuring in a way that the people who give him money make more money. And vouchers are a really great strategy. Not because of the voucher, right? See, the whole theory on the voucher, and people should understand this, is if I give you a Medicare voucher, right? And that allows you to buy insurance. It's, you know what I mean? It's the voucher isn't necessarily for healthcare, it's to buy insurance. What do the insurance companies do?
They raise the prices.
To just a little above the voucher, right? So they get the federal money, and then they get into you for another piece of it, right? And if you I'll give you this right off the bat. Here's a guarantee. That voucher, whatever that voucher is, will buy you an insurance plan or insurance program with a $6,000 deductible. And you want to reduce that deductible, though, then you got to pay them more and blah, blah, blah. Any plan to reform Medicare and Medicaid is guaranteed to take all the federal money, move it over toward private sector campaign donors, and then also take a little more out of the money of working people.
Do you think Trump goes along with this?
If he goes along with any element of it, then he's as much of a crook as they are. Okay?
Did you say crook?
Crook. It's crooked to come up with a plan that rewards your campaign donors in this kind of way. You know, a Democrat or a Republican does it, let's be clear. And so it's a very interesting question of whether, there's a whole bunch of questions that come out of this, whether the Democrats are smart enough and organized and coordinated enough to raise the alarm. They aren't always. Whether the media is functional enough to communicate the reality. These are big deal things. But if this happens, understand what's going on. You are redistributing federal money and working people's money into the pockets of self-interested multinational corporations, investment banks, other players. That's how this will work.
Well, am I mistaken, or have I heard that Donald Trump is considering Jamie Dimon to be in the cabinet as Treasury Secretary? Excuse me?
Why would that shock you?
Well, I thought he was saying on the campaign trail that Wall Street had too much influence in Hillary Clinton's campaign.
You know, Bernie Sanders did a speech last night, a very, very good speech in D.C. Incredibly well received, probably one of the better received speeches anybody's given since the election. What he did was an interesting thing. He didn't just, you know, rave about how horrible Donald Trump was. He said, yeah, Mr. Trump, we've been listening to you. Okay? Here's the list of things you said you were going to do. Raise wages. Good. Let's go do that. Reinstate Glass-Steagall. Good. Do that. Regulate Wall Street in ways that make sure that, you know, it doesn't crash the global economy and continue, you know, some of the most irresponsible profiteering in the history of humankind. Good. Let's do that. Massively invest in infrastructure, not in a way that moves money to private contractors who aren't really going to do very much, but, you know, that really does create a whole bunch of jobs, a massive job program. Good. Let's look at that. So, you know, he goes down this list. And then what Sanders says is the president's going to do that? We're not going to stand in the way of re-regulating Wall Street. We're not going to stand in the way of, you know, cracking down on the big banks. But if he doesn't do that, if he, you know, does quote-unquote reform, right, of any kind of form that you hear Paul Ryan or something like that talking about?
Run.
Yeah, no. Scream hypocrisy. Because, you know, whether you like Donald Trump or don't like Donald Trump, people didn't vote for him to turn Medicare and Medicaid into a voucher program, right? People didn't vote for him to bring Jamie Dimon in. People didn't vote for him to strengthen Wall Street and the big banks. And so this is the way to be smart and focused on what's going on here.
Well, I don't know if you saw Donald Trump at the 21 Club, but I heard him telling a bunch of bankers that he was going to cut their taxes.
He got a lot
of cheers.
Here's the bottom line, Sly. I said this to you probably no more than 100 times during the course of the campaign. If somebody's a billionaire populist, they're usually a populist during the campaign and a billionaire once they're elected.
By the way, do you know what a hamburger is at the 21 Club? I know you're a vegetarian, but you don't price hamburgers a whole lot, but, you know, when I start getting into the $9 range for a hamburger, I think that's too much.
Nine is a lot.
$36 for a hamburger where Donald Trump went for dinner the other night. I couldn't find the prices for the other food on the menu. It wasn't even listed, so it must have been really expensive. But
you know, Sly.
Yes.
You've entered into the if you have to ask zone here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I also found it
a little disturbing. Did you see what lines the front of that restaurant? Remember those things people used to put on their lawns that were racist?
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah.
Like the little statues?
Yes, lawn jockeys.
Uh-huh. No kidding. Really? Yeah, this shows how rural and Midwestern I am. I have not actually been to the 21 Club.
Well, I hadn't either, but one of the NBC correspondents wisely figured out where they were going, made a reservation, and snuck in there with their cell phone.
Allie Jackson. Yeah, I saw that. And there was apparently another reporter there as well. Now, we may not do this very often, but can I say something positive about Trump here?
Of course.
He went out to dinner like that in a pretty, you know, open and, you know, as among a bunch of rich people, I understand. But, you know, that I don't mind.
Oh, I don't care.
I don't mind him, you know, going out to dinner and, you know, interacting with people and stuff like that.
President-elect Obama ditched the press in Hawaii and took his girls to a water park. So I don't.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I like things like that. The question, though, is it seems to me, having said that, isn't it interesting where he chooses for his comfort level to go? Place with the $36 hamburger and the in the lawn jockey.
He didn't go to the Bob Evans in Elkhart, Indiana.
No, he did not. And or to Chili's or places like that. Did you hear about this thing? It was a Chili's restaurant the other day. And I don't know where it was. It's California, Texas, one of those places. And they were having some sort of Veterans Day thing for veterans. And an African-American veteran went to get his, you know, free dinner or whatever. And he was challenged because people were saying, well, we don't believe you're really a veteran.
Oh, nice.
I know. It's horrible. It's like a nightmarish scenario.
We're living in times where people's behavior, I don't know if you saw the West Side Swim Club, where somebody sent a letter to some parents who had minority children at that pool to get out. We don't, now that Trump's president, we don't want you around here. I mean, what is going on?
Well, look, you know, did you see the Saturday Night Live routine with Dave Chappelle?
I did.
It's really good. It's incredibly good. They've got Dave Chappelle is sitting with a bunch of white folks watching election returns on election night.
Yeah, Chris Rock was hilarious.
That, but just the whole routine, where it's like every time people are going, wow, you know, I'm starting to think people may be racist and sexist out there. And Dave Chappelle is sitting there going, you think? You know, it was actually a very, very interesting sort of, you know, hold the mirror up kind of situation. This is what we know. Everybody's got some racism, some sexism, some other, all these things in them. People shouldn't deny that you know, that's a reality, right? Human beings are imperfect. But for some folks, it's much more of a defining reality. And when you have a president, powerful people, chief White House counselors and others, who are telling you that's okay, that's, you know, like there's space for that. I think that you see things come to the surface very rapidly that are deeply unsettling. That doesn't mean, by the way, this doesn't mean that all of Trump's backers were, you know, bad players. I think a lot of people voted for Donald Trump because they were scared, because they're frightened about the future, because of, you know, real concerns about economic issues and other things. But what we do have to understand is that this Trump victory has opened some things up in our society and given people some people a sense of license. And Donald Trump himself has a profound responsibility. Instead of running over to the 21 Club for dinner, he might want to seriously think about putting together a speech that he gives in a major setting. Maybe even giving a speech on television. It seems like our television stations are very glad to cover whatever he does, where he talks to America. And he talks seriously, not just saying, you know, knock it off, right? But does a serious speech about it.
Well, right now, before he gets to that, he might want to set up a government. And, of course, it's complete bedlam right now.
Chaos. Yes, chaos. Well, you put Mike Pence in charge of something. Have you ever driven on a road in Indiana?
Yes, I have.
You know what I mean? I mean, this guy is not famous for being good at what he does.
Now it's really funny. He was losing his race for re-election for governor.
No, but it's a funny thing. Every time that something goes wrong, right? So, you know, you get to push Chris Christie out. Oh, well, Mike Pence will pick that up. You're going to push Mike Rogers out. Oh, Mike Pence will pick that up. You don't understand what's going on here, right? You're giving a guy who is famously inept, like, you know, really, really well recognized as inept.
Wait a minute here. Wait a minute here. Do I see another Nichols book coming? Is this going to be the Cheney book only?
Oh my gosh, I hadn't thought of that, man. I'm talking to my publisher this afternoon. I'll see.
Oh my God, he's such a boring. You know, give Dick Cheney this. He wasn't boring. Mike Pence is. He may be inept and he may be politically evil, but he is so boring.
Here's one other element of the difference between Cheney and Pence. There's really good evidence to believe that Cheney, you know, took about like half of the Republican agenda and just winked and nodded at it and didn't take it seriously at all, right? You know, I mean, the only thing he was serious about is making rich people richer, and you know, building out that military-industrial complex. Yeah, I mean, the things that were so associated with them. But a lot of the social agenda, a lot of other things, there's real questions about whether he had all that much interest in it. With Pence, he's a 100%er, right? I think, you know, military, economic, social issues, he's all in without a blink of the eye. And if you think that Mike Pence is ever going to, like, in some back room, in some meeting, go, you know, we really shouldn't do that, it would be wrong. I promise you, that ain't going to happen.
I don't see that coming. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation with us. Let's talk about something local. This happened in Madison last night. Ben Shapiro, who used to be with Breitbart, but is estranged from that organization, spoke at the UW-Madison. This is from WKOW.
Amber and Greg, protesters say they attended the lecture to purposefully disrupt it, and that they did.
Safety! 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 Safety!
It started as a typical lecture in front of a packed crowd, but just after what you saw there, protesters interrupted Shapiro several times. However, a majority of the crowd sent a firm message. They were there to support him.
USA! USA! USA!
Shapiro, who was hosted by UW-Madison's chapter of Young Americans for Freedom, was talking about social justice, white supremacy, and safe spaces. But protesters were there to take a stand against those things, and Shapiro fired back.
Yes, it's in his jurisdiction to come, but it's like, no, what does that say about us as a university, that we already have a ton of these racial bias incidents, and to have this person come over, especially right after the Trump election, I think it's just disrespectful.
So you get to interrupt lectures if you're the right race or if you're the right gender or the right sexual orientation. You get to do these things without punishment because, after all, that's in the nature of social justice, group justice.
After that comment, protesters began chanting shame before stepping in front of the stage, forcing Shapiro to stop talking. Shapiro took to the chalkboard behind him, writing morons. A couple minutes later, the demonstrators walked out, but not before chanting expletives and flipping off Shapiro. And as you can see right here, Shapiro responded. Now, after the protesters left, they stayed in the hallway just outside the lecture hall and continued chanting. But Greg and Amber, UW police were on the scene. Nobody was arrested, and Shapiro was able to continue his speech.
Well, again, just an example of so many of these types of incidents going on around the country. All right, thanks.
Well, there you go. Everything's fine on campus.
Boy, what a mess, right? Look, I do believe that lecturers ought to be able to give their lecture. You know, I think at the end of the day, and I don't mind a protest. You know, I think that it's legitimate to protest. It's legitimate to raise your objection. But at a certain point, you let the person finish what they're saying. If it's horrible, you want to hear it and then confront it. Anyways, and he. It didn't look like Shapiro did anything to dial that down.
No, the two-fingered salute at the end was unusually dignified, like, or writing morons on the chalkboard. Although Ben Shapiro, to his credit, has condemned Steve Bannon.
Well, that's why I was interested in, you know, I really disagree with his take, okay?
Well, he's a huckster. You know, there's this whole business, and you've written about this, there's this whole business to try to discredit public, college education,
right,
in America,
and anything that's public. And also, this is a big theme, that what he was bringing to the campus is, and I can really understand why people might want to object to this. There's this sort of right wing attack that traces back actually to Glenn Beck on the phrase social justice, you know, and objecting to churches that, you know, say that they have a social justice ministry and things of this nature. And so, you know, there really is an effort to build this out.
My church has been doing social justice for thousands of years.
Well, yeah, but you know why they're doing this? They really are. There's a portion of the right, the extreme right, which also I think is pretty much the mainstream right, which wants to diminish the phrase social justice because they think that it has an influence on otherwise conservative people to maybe do things that are decent and right.
Oh.
I'm not kidding. Yeah. And so they demonize people who, you know, say, yeah, there's social justice matters. There's certain things we need to do. And even if you don't totally, you know, if you're not totally warm toward a progressive agenda or a liberal agenda, you know, caring for the poor, caring for the refugee, the other, the whoever may be dismissed or diminished by society, that's important, that, you know, you find it in most religious texts, no matter what your religion. And I think that, you know, so, you know, I'd love to have seen Shapiro in a debate, frankly, you know, and have somebody perhaps challenge some of those views.
We're seeing a real divide. People are almost completely separating from each other. The latest being that the Milwaukee Bucks will not be staying at Trump hotels. Now, of course, the owners of the Bucks are big supporters of Hillary Clinton and Democrats, but many of the players were uncomfortable staying at those hotels. And now, of course, there's an uproar from many right-wingers who say they're not going to go to Bucks games. I'm kind of thinking they weren't regular attendees at the Bradley Center.
I mean, the key on that one's going to be Belling, because he is a big Bucks backer, isn't he?
That's right.
Yeah, he likes going to the games.
But we're kind of, you know, things were bad enough even before Donald Trump ever even got in the political arena, but it's like the divide is almost seemingly permanent.
Well, let's see, right? Again, this becomes a critical moment. And as I said before, we could talk about these incidents on campuses, talk about, you know, people in all sorts of different settings, you know, objecting, challenging, and worse things happening, right? Much worse things happening. And that always brings it down to the grassroots, right? It always brings it down to the individual level. This is a country that has a long history of hopefully inspired and even healing leadership. John Kennedy, recognizing religious divisions in this country between Protestants and Catholics, gave a remarkable speech in the 1960 campaign that did a lot. As recently as 2008, Mitt Romney gave quite a remarkable speech, and again in 2012 to some extent, on religion and divisions and how we view folks who are in smaller religions, some might refer to as minority religions. Obama spoke about race and did so in some profound ways, particularly when he was under attack as regards to Reverend Wright and other folks. And so we have this tradition, and sometimes, Sly, it has an impact when somebody steps up and does it. You have to be at the center of the controversy. You have to be at the center of the passions. And so this does fall to Donald Trump. I mean, he has a moral responsibility that goes beyond ideology, politics, you know, the position he is about to assume. I have not seen him step up.
Yeah, it has,
I am
has
really
more the has more the
fort
has more the Fort Sumter feel right now.
Well, my friend, some people did try to speak up and speak, and this is of course the lesson of history, right? That we aren't necessarily healed by a speech. We aren't necessarily healed by a message, an attempt at unification. But it's a good thing to try. It's a really, really good thing to try, and it has meaning. And one of the things it does, Sly, sometimes, is that it doesn't fix everything. It doesn't end every division. But it separates off that small portion of people that are say, among, you know, they're associated with the newly elected leader or the leader that think they've got license to do things that are incredibly dangerous or irresponsible. It separates them off and says, no, you're not a part of this. William F. Buckley, the great conservative leader, in the early 1960s, when he saw the John Birch Society becoming a huge force within state Republican parties, Buckley was the great conservative hero, a rising conservative hero at that moment. National Review was a very, very influential, popular magazine. Buckley went on the cover of his magazine and also went in all of his public settings and said, you know, drawing a line here. This isn't who we are. This isn't conservatism. And it took a couple of years of back and forth, some political defeats for various folks, but eventually that had some genuine influence. And so I'm just saying, if we remember Buckley positively in any way, I think it's because of that. And I think that Donald Trump really has if there's anyone around him who is giving him counsel and saying, you know, look, here's what you need to do now, this ought to be at the top of the list, not, you know, figuring out whether to put, you know, some investment banker in charge of some cabinet post.
We'll have to ask Jared Kushner. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation, thanks for coming to SlysOffice.com today.
Appreciate it, my friend.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.